There is a song in my heart today, something I've never had. Jesus has come and my sins away. Oh, say, but I'm glad. Oh, say, but I'm glad, I'm glad. Oh, say, but I'm glad. Jesus has come and my cup's overrun. Oh, say, but I'm glad. Wonderful, marvelous love he brings into a heart that's sad. Through darkest tunnels the soul can sing. Oh, say, but I'm glad. Oh, say, but I'm glad, I'm glad. Oh, say, but I'm glad. Jesus has come and my cup's overrun. Oh, say, but I'm glad. Come we that love the Lord, and let our joys be known. Join in a song with sweet accord, join in a song with sweet accord. And thus around the throne, and thus around the throne, we're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of God. Jesus has come and my cup's overrun. Oh, say, but I'm glad.
And thank you, guys. We need to be glad people. We need to be happy people. Thankful people of what God is doing. Would you take your Bibles and go to the book of Esther? Esther chapter 1 is where we will be this morning. Just in chapter 1 is the plan. Esther chapter 1. Again, as I mentioned before, I really enjoy going to an Old Testament book that has a story behind it. I mean, every book is good. You go to, you know, even in Ephesians, you know, you're good. And there's a lot of doctrine, there's a lot of things, but there's something about an Old Testament story that is just, I don't know if I would say fun, but it's just exciting. There's a lot there. There's a story that's going on, and we get to follow something. I enjoyed a couple years ago going through Ruth. I remember that study in Ruth, and what a blessing that it was to go through Ruth, and I'm looking forward to another book of the Bible that is based on the life of a lady. But honestly, there's more to it than a lady and her life. It's a story of God, and we see God's faithfulness in it. And so we're in the book of Esther, and I've entitled the message this morning, An Unlikely Setting. We're going to look at the setting here, very unlikely, for the outcoming of this story. What takes place in this story is very not expected from the setting that is given here. And we're going to look at that this morning, an unlikely setting. You probably know the story of Esther. If you don't know it, then glad that you're with us because you can get to learn the story of Esther. And I trust that we can do that in a very clear way for you. But if you are familiar, a lot of things that you get to learn about this time when we look at this. And so Esther is a book in the Old Testament of God's goodness and His providence concerning His people. A good book in the Bible about God's goodness and His providence concerning His people. You know, God is a very good God to His people, and He is a providential God. He's always looking behind the scenes into the future to see what they're going to need, and always working so that they will receive what they need. God is a God of providence, and we're going to talk about that many times throughout. A God of goodness and a God of providence. Today in chapter 1, we're going to see some unlikely circumstances in this unlikely setting. Look at Esther chapter 1 and in verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, this is Ahasuerus, which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia over 127 provinces. Now, already we're ready to stop right there. And what practical application can we get from that? Notice the words that were used to start. Now, it took place in the days of. Do you know that there are four other times beside this that these words almost exact maybe one or two words different in just, I think, one of them, but almost the same. Four other times besides Esther that we read almost, now it took place in the days of. Kind of interesting, but yet if you do a little bit of study, do you know that every one of the five times that now in the days of, or something very similar to that, all five times what we're about to read is something very negative and destructive that is about ready to take place. In fact, really quickly, you don't need to turn there, but in Genesis chapter 14 and verse 1, and it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Ariat, king of Elasar, Shedalarmar, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, what's about ready to take place? Some war, some battle. Okay? Bad things are about to take place. So when we read here in Esther, now it came to pass in the days of, everybody says, stop, there's a plot that is going to be negative right away. We go to Ruth chapter 1. Actually, Ruth starts in a very similar way. Now, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. In the first, in Genesis, we had war. In this, we have famine and much death in the family. You remember that? There is famine. And they leave, and in the land that they had fled to, we have some husbands of some wives that die. And so there's certain tragedy that takes place. Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 1, and it came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, the king of Judah, that Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the king of Ramaliah, king of Israel, went up toward Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail against it. Another setting in which the beginning things in it are devastating war. In Jeremiah chapter 1 and verse 3, and it came to pass in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the carrying away of Jerusalem captive in the fifth month. Here we have leading up to captivity and captivity for God's people. Every time, in five times in the past, in the word of God that's written there, these words, we see a very negative plot taking place. Something is about to happen which is negative, some catastrophe, some doom, but always ending happy, always ending well, always starting in grief, but something good takes place. Why is that? I'll tell you why. Because there's a faithful God behind the scenes that is always at work. Whether it's famine, whether it's sickness, whether it's captivity, whether it's war, no matter what it is, God is always behind it, and He's always up to something good. My question for you today is, do you believe that? That God is always up to something good in everything that He does in your life? Now, for some of you, you'd have to say, I know that that's what the Word of God teaches, but I have a hard time with that one because I cannot see any way that there's anything good with this. That's what we're going to see. Esther is supposed to be a book of God's goodness and the providence of God, and yet it's the very book that we see God's people threatened to be utterly destroyed and to be wiped off the face of the earth. What a tragic thing that's about ready to take place. You know that God often uses difficult circumstances in our lives to ultimately demonstrate His goodness and providence in His people's lives, in our lives, to show His everlasting care and leading in our lives. God always is doing something good in your life. Yes, the negative thing that happened in your life this week, that you say, Pastor, no way. There's no way God has something good. God allowed that to happen because He's trying to lead you to something good. You know, we see in the Bible, we see all kinds of people born into tragic situations. I think of Moses. Would you have liked to have been born in Moses' time as a young boy, child? Absolutely not. Just about ready, you know, the king's just about ready, the Pharaoh's just about ready to take care of all the men, children that are born, you know, in the land. And certainly Moses is one of them. We have David. You know, say, we don't know anything David about, you know, his life. But it's amazing that God brought a young man into a huge time in Israel's life where there's going to be very difficult with the Philistine opposition. And God rose a young man that would come into a difficult situation, and God would mean something good with that young man's life. life. We think of John the Baptist that's born, not in a bad situation, but in a time of life that he's got to come and prepare the way of the Lord in opposition to the Christ that was going to come. And yet he rose up, John the Baptist, to come and do an amazing work preparing the way of the Lord. Even Jesus in his life, again, not a tragic situation. He had a quiet, start to his life, in his first, 30 years of his life in the carpenter's home. But I'll tell you what, he brought Jesus for such a time as this to come up in a time when they would need a deliverer, and Jesus would come. And when he came to be their deliverer, Messiah, and they rejected him. I would say a difficult situation, but in all these things ended in happiness. Paul. You think of Paul, born into his life and all that he went through and the turmoil and struggles and the persecution that Paul went through. But are we all thankful that Paul was born at the time that he was to do the work that he did for us today? Are we happy? Are we thankful? Absolutely. God is always working to do good. When unusual and difficult circumstances come into our lives, listen to this. You can automatically know that God is about to demonstrate his goodness to you. God always has a person. He always has a situation. He always has an event that is leading us to him. Always. And my friend, I want to tell you something. That's good news today. God is always working in your situation. Now, I want you to take just a moment to think about what's going on in your lives. Some of you are already challenging the truth of what's given. There's no way. This going on in my life cannot be good. My friends, God is always up to something good, and we know that all things work together for good. To them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trial of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. You see, God is about to do something good. You know, as we look at the first four verses, we see an unlikely set of circumstances that is taking place here. We see unlikely people. In chapter 1 and verse 1, now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus. I mentioned last week, Ahasuerus was the name kind of like in Egypt, the Pharaoh, the leader, the ruler there. His specific name is Xerxes I. There was Artaxerxes. His son after that, but Xerxes, number one, is there, and he's called Ahasuerus here. This man was a man known for his drinking. He was known for his lavish banquets. He was known for his harsh temper. He was known for his sexual appetite. And in 465, Xerxes was assassinated by the head of his own bodyguard. He was a man that was maybe a strong and powerful leader that liked to do things very big. He was a very wealthy man. He liked to do things big, but obviously he had some things about him that weren't very popular with a lot of the people. And yet it's amazing that God used this man to accomplish great things for his people at this time in their lives. Again, he was an extremely rich man. I would say kind of an impossible situation for this extravagant and wealthy and popular king to have any dealings with such a poor Jewish girl in tandem together to deliver God's people in such an amazing way that the ripple effect affects us in 2022. And it's going to affect us here in the next several weeks as we look at the story of Esther. How could God use a king like this? What about the other characters of Esther and Mordecai, her uncle? Interesting. Let's look at uncle first. Mordecai, obviously taking in Esther, he didn't have to. He probably didn't have the money to or the means to, but he took in his niece, Esther, into his home as her parents had passed away. We read that. I think it's in chapter 2. We'll get to that later. But Mordecai, I looked up the name Mordecai to see what Mordecai, some would pronounce it Mordecai, however you pronounce it. We're talking about the same man here. This man, do you know what the name means? You say, what are the people that God's going to use in an amazing way in this book? Well, first of all, he's going to use Ahasuerus, a man totally opposite of the way we would think that God would pick to use. But here we have a man named Mordecai. Well, certainly he was a good man, and he was a good man. Do you know what his name means? Follower of Marduk, which was a god in those days. And his name was, can you imagine what kind of parents did he have that would name this child a follower of this pagan god?
Folks, this is the kind of man that God is going to use in the story of Esther, follower of Marduk. And, very literally, do you know that this name means little man or little boy? Can I tell you something by way of very quick application? It doesn't matter if you're an Ahasuerus, an Xerxes, or a follower of a false god, or considered in God's eyes as a little man or a little boy. It doesn't matter if you're a Gideon or a Nebuchadnezzar or a Paul or an Apollos. It doesn't matter who you are, like we're learning on Sunday nights. It doesn't matter who you are. God chooses to use everyone and everything for His honor and for His glory, and you can bank on that. You can trust in that. That is because that is who God is. What about Esther? Esther is, of course, in her uncle's home. And the name comes from a Hebrew word or name. And it's actually, if you would just switch the two first letters, instead of E-S-T-H-E-R, it would come from S-E-T-H-E-R. I don't know if you pronounce that Sether, but interesting that that name or that word, Sether, as opposed to Esther, you switch those two first words and it means to hide. Somebody that is hidden. Now, we'll talk a little bit later, but it's interesting that this young little Jewish girl that was hidden away in the society of these Persian people, also, when she went into the kingdom, was hiding her origin and her nationality, a hidden gem. Esther, as you switch the letters around, is the name for a gem called a star. Now, catch the significance there. A hidden gem that is going to be polished and make themselves known in an amazing way. Very unlikely situations, unlikely people that God is going to use to take care of His people. At that, you take Esther and Mordecai together, and we see some unlikely people, nominal Jews at that. Why were not they? I mentioned about this last week. Why were they not a part of the first zealous group that went over back to Jerusalem? I don't know. And we have to be careful not to condemn them for not going. But I would say this, for some reason, God had a purpose for them in Persia, not in Jerusalem. He had a special place, and we know that He did. But these nominal Jews, there could have been other Jews that looked back at Mordecai and Esther and say, why weren't they a part of this group? Why didn't they come? Why weren't they zealous to get back to Jerusalem? This is the place that God had made for us. I don't know, but they could have been people that were looked down upon, but they were back in Persia. Certainly nominal Jews, but really nobodies that take place in this story. But can I say that God has big plans with all sorts of unlikely people? Do you know that God can use you to help turn America around so that we follow the Lord again? You could be one. Young people that are here in the room today, all you little kids that are sitting there, and I don't know what you're doing, hopefully listening, but listen, I want to tell you something. Any one of you little kids, you listen, God could use you. God could use you one day to do some amazing things in this church. He could use you to do some amazing things in Mount Joy and Elizabethtown or the surrounding areas. God could use you one day to do great things in Pennsylvania. God could use you to do great things in America. God could use you to do things in our world. We have no idea. We have no idea. But can I tell you this? We look at these precious little kids and we talk about that. But God can use you, and He can also use a president that is in the office right now to do some amazing things. God can use anyone. And can I tell you this? You might think that there are certain things that are mistakes in our world, but God makes no mistakes. God makes no mistakes. And God, when He puts people in office and when He puts people into homes and in churches, He has them there for a purpose, for the purpose of that is right now something that is needed. God has you here for a reason. You're here in this church. Can I tell you that God has you here for a purpose? And that's why we need to fulfill that. That's why we need to be here. That's why we need to give ourselves to it, because God has a purpose for you specifically. He had a purpose for Ahasuerus. He had a purpose for Mordecai. He had a purpose for Esther. He had a purpose for Haman, which we're not going to get into yet. He had a purpose. There's not very many people that are listed in this book that are key roles, key figures. But I want to tell you something. God has unusual circumstances. He has unusual characters and people. I want you to see, look at some more unlikely circumstances as we look at this passage. God, who knows, you know, God is doing some amazing things with the people and the plot that he has put into this. You know, let's look at the rest of the chapter. Well, we've only looked at verse 1. Would you sit tight for a few moments and let me read chapter 1, because I want you to see this, and then we're going to come and make some really quick closing statements. I know you like that word, closing statements. You said you're just starting. There's just a few things that we're going to get out of this, but follow. I want you to get the story, and then let's hit a few points before we leave. All right, now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, this is Ahasuerus which reigned, from India even unto Ethiopia, over 127 provinces, that in those days, when the king Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan the palace, in the third year of his reign, he made a feast unto all his princes and his servants, his power, the power of Persia and Media, the nobles and princes of the provinces being before him, when he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the honor of his excellent majesty many days, even 84 days. Folks, I want to tell you something. That's a big old party. 180 days of look at what I have and look at what I can feed you with and look at what you can eat and drink and all of that stuff. 180 days. And when these days were expired, okay, done with the party, the king made a feast unto all the people that were present in Shushan, the palace, both unto great and small, 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. Did you catch that? 180-day feast? 7-day feast now. He's got another purpose, another feast. It's a good thing. You know, that's why we eat so much, you know, in our church, because we celebrate. No, I'm just kidding about that. When the days were expired, the king made a feast, okay? We already read verse 5. Look at verse 6. Where were white, green, and blue hangings, fastened with cords and the fine linen and purple, to silver rings and pillars of marble. The beds were of gold and silver upon a pavement of red, blue, and white, and black marble. They gave him drink in vessels of gold, the vessels being diverse, one from another, and royal wine in abundance according to the state of the king. And the drinking was according to the law. None did compel, for so the king had appointed to all the officers of the house, that they should do according to every man's pleasure. Also Vashti, the queen, made a feast for the women in the royal house, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the 7th day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abagtha, Zithar, Carcass, and 7 chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus the king, to bring Vashti the queen before the king with a crown royal, to show the people of the princess her beauty, for she was fair to look on. But the queen Vashti refused to come to the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. Then the king said unto the wise men, which knew the times, for so was the king's manner toward that new law and judgment. And the next unto him was Karshina, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Merez, Marsina, and Memucan, the 7 princes of Persia and Media, which saw the king's face and which sat the first in the kingdom. What shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to law, because she hath not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains? And Memucan answered before the king and the princesses, Princess, Vashti the queen hath not done wrong to the king only, but also to all the princes and to all the people that are in all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus. For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes. And when it shall be reported, the king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she came not. Likewise shall the ladies of Persia and Media say this day unto all the king's princes, which have heard of the deed of the queen. Thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath. If it please the king, let there be a royal commandment with him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before the king Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And when the king's decree, which he shall make shall be published throughout all the his empire, for it is great. All the wives shall give to their husbands honor, both to great and small. And the saying pleased the king and the princes, and the king did according to the word of Memucan. For he sent letters unto all the king's provinces, unto every province, according to the writing thereof, and to every people after their language, that every man should bear rule in his own house, and that it should be published according to the language of every people. All right. So we read the rest of the chapter. Now, we're looking at unlikely circumstances here. We're looking at God's people about ready to be killed and destroyed, and yet we're looking at God's people ready to be delivered, and not only unlikely people at a bad time in history, but we're looking at a drinking party, if I could say, in the palace or in the White House. Can you imagine 187 days of this taking place? An unlikely situation. You know, here we have the king ordering his beautiful wife to come, and why? Probably a beauty or lust pageant for all the men to behold. You know, what an unlikely story to see. Here and we can go and dive into this of who was right and who was wrong, but a disobedient wife and a story surrounding that. What kind of a situation is God preparing? You know, if that were to take place in the United States, we would all look and say, something bad is taking place in America. Nothing good can come from this. But my friend, I want to tell you, no matter how bad it gets, do you realize, I've said this all the time, it's always been bad since sin came into the world. There's always been rebellion. There's always been the prince in the power of the air, whether he was slithering and crawling around, you know, upright or on his belly, or whether he is coming down to God or going up to God to ask if he could have his servant Job's life. Listen, Satan has been going around trying to disrupt things since the beginning, and we are not living in any different kind of day and age. The evil one is trying to recruit other people to be on his side and to go against the Lord of hosts, to be against God, and to destroy us, to destroy God, which he'll never do, and trying to disrupt so many problems. That's the same as it is today as it was back then. You know, this is a bad situation, but in all situations, no matter if you were lived in the good old days in America or whether you lived in the time of Esther or live right now in 22, God is always working behind the scenes, and he can work through unlikely people. He can work through unlikely situations, unlikely circumstances, just like this. I want you to notice in verses 12 to 20, an unlikely observation. Did you notice? And I would say this is kind of odd. And there might be some other scholars that might feel like they have a grip on why and what was taking place here. But did you catch this? Of course, Vashti the queen was called in. Some would lift up Vashti because, well, she should have never taken place in such a wicked thing. You know what? I don't, maybe I'm too dumb. I don't know. I don't really have a thought, and you know, of whether, you know, of you know, should she have been there, should she not? But I'll tell you this, the king, her husband, had called her. She didn't come. But you notice what this Memucan guy came up with. Did you recall this? And to me, this is very, it's kind of a little bit of a side note in this, but it's kind of interesting. We have these Persians and Mede princes people. We have this wicked king that's trying to, you know, that they've been drinking and partying for 187 days. And we've got this lady that they're going to come in and, you know, prance around before them. She says no. And this princess, Memucan, you know, he comes and he said, listen, this is not good in this kingdom, because if all the rest of the ladies are watching what's going on, and Vashti is their heroine that's there, they're going to do the same thing. They're not going to obey their husbands. They will, you know, we'll be in trouble, because we'll have a bunch of ladies that are not subjective to their husbands. They won't be obeying, and there will be anarchy in our kingdom. Now, I don't know what you take of that, but that's kind of an interesting situation. Kind of an amazing thing, this, I would say, an unbelievable concern that this Memucan guy had. You know, you think these are wicked. They wouldn't care. They wouldn't care about the life in the home. They wouldn't care about these ladies and how they're following. But this man makes this observation, and he all of a sudden, kind of out of nowhere, do you kind of catch what I'm saying? Out of nowhere, they're concerned about husband and wife relationships in the family. You know, kind of odd to me. Why was this thrown into the picture? Well, I'm going to tell you why it was thrown. God put an unlikely circumstance because he's bringing about other things. Where would have Esther come from if this wouldn't have happened? Now, I'm not saying God forced Vashti to disobey her husband, but God uses everything. I'm not preaching on Vashti this morning, whether she was right or she was wrong. I'm presenting to you, God's at work in every circumstance. Even when people do wrong, even when people lie, even when people cheat, even when people are cruel, even when people are critical, even when people are mean, even when people are rude, no matter what, God is working, and for you, it's God's will. Can I tell you that what happened in this story? Unlikely circumstances, an unlikely setting, God is setting the place up for his beauty and his glory and his faithfulness to shine. Can I tell you that that's what God's doing in every circumstances in your life? Every circumstance. God is setting up for his faithfulness so that we can see it. What an amazing opportunity. Now, could they even fathomably think that God was about ready to do something amazing with the Jewish people? They had no clue. They didn't know what was going to take place with Haman and his decree and how he kind of got Ahasuerus to decree that these people need to be killed. They had no clue. Isn't it amazing that God was setting up the stages even before anything even happened? You know, the first thing could in Esther chapter 1 could have been Haman, right? We need to kill the Jews. Here comes along, and it would almost make sense in our minds, okay, bad situation, God's creating somebody good. God is creating something good before the bad situation ever came about. Can I tell you, folks, in your whatever you're going through in your life, God has already been before you. He has been setting the stage long time before you. God was setting the stage for what you're going through today, way back in Esther's life. He wasn't just setting the stage for an amends to genocide. He was setting the stage for your deliverance in 2022. That's a good God. You say God had Sean Madrid in mind back then? Absolutely he did. Absolutely. God is a God of the universe and he's a personal God of you. You think about that. God is a personal God that has you always in mind. Only God could do that. I couldn't take care of millions and millions and billions of people. You add up the amount of people ever, a running total, it'd be trillions and trillions and bigger than that. I don't know how many people it would be, but lots of people. And God had every single person in mind in their lives. Amazing situation. God uses amazing things to bring good in people's lives. I praise the Lord that back in 1974-75, I don't know the circumstances, but back in 1974-1975, God had a teenage girl and her sister go to a movie theater. Why they went to a movie theater on that night to watch, unsaved, unchurched pretty much, no desire for God, to watch a Billy Graham crusade. I'm not doing any promotion of Billy Graham. But on that night, there was a teenage girl and her sister that went to the movie theater and watched a Billy Graham crusade. And that night, trusted Christ as her personal Lord and Savior. That young girl went home, shared that truth with her parents, and they got saved. She shared that truth with her sister that had heard with her, And she trusted Christ. She shared that truth with her two brothers, and they trusted Christ. She later shared that truth with her future husband, and he got saved. They shared that truth with her in-laws, Catholics, and they got saved. They all got saved. And that lady was my mom. Unlikely. I'm not promoting the movie theater, I'm not promoting Billy Graham, but I want to tell you something. God can use any circumstance to do His work. And it's time that we recognize God is doing work here. This seems unlikely. In fact, it even seems wrong. This last week on Colebrook Road, an unlikely circumstance took place. Very unlikely. Unlikely. There at 5050 Colebrook Road, the intersection of Bachmanville and Colebrook, there's a vehicle that wrongly went through the stop sign that was there out in the middle of the country, probably not aware of that stop sign, went straight through that stop sign. Right while they go through the intersection, there's a white truck that's coming through, and we don't exactly know everything that happened, but the truck swerved, clipped a vehicle or two, however it worked out. Motorcycle coming the other way, ran into the whole mess. There's devastation, parts everywhere, people hurt, ambulances, helicopters, life flights, everything situation there. The guy in the white truck, I'd encourage you someday to drive by the Brubaker's home. He went through that intersection. The car's coming through, had to swerve, probably hit, it sounds like they hit, swerved to the right, went through. You go there and look at it. There's only enough room for a truck that size to fit through two trees. Only enough room. On the other side of the two trees, right in the kind of in the middle, through at an angle through those trees, there's a van that is sitting there, a nice looking van that's sitting there. That truck goes through that intersection. The guy goes through, hits that van, turns it completely the other way, completely sideways, and stops that vehicle. The guy, as far as I know, fine. Did they take him to the hospital? I don't know. They took everybody to the hospital because of impact and everything. They got to get everybody checked out and everything. But he goes to the hospital. But you go back, and I know that I've talked to Pastor Dan a little bit about this. You can't ask a bunch of what ifs and all that because you can imagine all things. But just go back to that scene and think through, because I was thinking through this just a little bit. As far as we know, this gentleman driving the white, and we could talk about the motorcycle driver who is in much more critical condition, Hershey, but they're, you know, still alive, only by God's grace. But I want you to think about that guy driving that white truck through there, because as I drove by and I looked at it, and there's only, you can still see the marks going straight through those two trees. Now, one of the trees is not super big, but fairly decent size. The other one is big. If that guy, by the way, well, let me tell you, the tree, he goes through, if he would have hit that tree, big tree, if he would have hit that tree, there's no doubt in my mind, that tree would have stopped that truck in its tracks. Would you agree? It would have stopped that truck right there, because you just don't run over a tree like that. Most likely, and by the way, it's the bigger tree on the left, right? That's the driver's side. Over just a little bit, if he would have hit that tree, most likely he would have died. Now, we never know. We never know what happened. But most likely he would have nailed that tree, the tree that didn't give. But do you know that he went through both of those trees and he hit a van? Now, for us in this church, we look and say, how devastating. Can I tell you something? God obviously has a plan for that man. Because, you know, Pastor Dan talked to that man, and that guy doesn't remember anything of going through those trees. He remembers nothing. Because when I heard it, I thought, wow, he must have really had the ability to swerve. And because There's no way to get through those trees going that fast, really. If I probably tried to reenact the scene and tried to swerve and go through the trees, there's a good chance that I probably wouldn't make it very well. But that man says he doesn't even remember anything about that. Who was guiding that man through the trees? I want to tell you something. We say that it was devastating that he hit the Brubaker van, and partly it was, but I want to tell you something. That van was there for a cushion. Had he not hit the van, he either would have hit the tree and died, or he would have went into the home where this precious family was at. I'm going to tell you something. God directed that vehicle straight through those trees to hit that van. And I told Pastor Dan the other day, I said, you know what? There is going to be a tremendous opportunity of testimony about a faithful God to this guy. Because I don't care who he is, and he might deny it, but I don't think that guy could ever get that out of his mind. If he could be told about how God directed him through that, how could you deny God doing that? Because you can't do it humanly. You have to attribute it to someone else that would direct you through those trees to cushion you so that you could stop and be alive. I want to tell you something. God has something special, even for the motorcycle guy, which we're not even talking about. Some reason they're alive. And they made it through. Can I tell you something? I don't know if Mark on the motorcycle or who, and I don't know the guy in the white truck, I don't know if they'll ever come to trust Christ, but I want to tell you something. God worked through that circumstance, and God put a special family in a certain house with a special van there for a purpose. For a purpose. There was a purpose for that van there. Pastor Dan had gotten out of that van 5 minutes before that. Everything, and God planted those trees there a long time ago. God put that certain, he left a certain amount there, and he had those guys in mind. There's no way that he didn't. Can I tell you, unlikely circumstances, ungodly circumstances, unlikely people, ungodly people, God is at work all the time for our good. He has something to accomplish. He has something to do in our lives, and it's time that we recognize, what is God doing in our lives? You might look at it and say, I don't know. That's a mistake. God knows. And we can know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Brethren, count it all joy. Count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this. Know these things, he says, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. Let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. We look at the setting in Esther, and we have a lot of unlikelies. But God was setting the stage beforehand. Big party. Wicked king. Circumstances with the queen. A prince that was going to be concerned about an odd thing in that kingdom. He was setting the stage. Because now Vashti is going to be set aside to be thrown with the rest of the king's harem back in another complex, and another king was going to be, queen was going to be called upon from an unlikely setting to do some amazing work that God had definitely prepared her personality, her upbringing, her background to spare God's people so that they could return to Jerusalem. What an amazing story. It's exciting. We get to see more of this story unfold. But what a setting. My friends, There's no greater setting in Esther than in your life. You've got a setting. Your family has a setting. The settings in life are God-ordained. They're beautiful and they're perfect. And God is doing good work because why? He wants to bring you to himself. God, I thank you so much that you are doing some amazing things in our lives, and we must recognize this. We must stop and look and see what you're doing. And we, although we shake our heads, we must see a faithful God. Lord, I love what Philippians chapter 1 and verse 6 says, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. God, you have begun a good work at our salvation. You have started good work. You are doing good things, things that are you're preparing us for that we don't even know are going to happen. But God, you have gone before us. You're getting us ready. God, we thank you. And we praise your name today. And we look forward to counting it joy. God, we look forward to seeing your faithfulness. We look forward to what you're going to do. God, thank you. Thank you for your preparations. Lord, may we see a good and faithful God in everything. For it's in Jesus' holy and precious name we pray. Amen.